Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously, and the podcast about rugby that is there for you every single Monday morning, 52 weeks of the year, not just after amazing weekends of Six Nations rugby when everyone else is at it as well. We're here all the time, and if you appreciate that fact, you know what you can do. You can hit subscribe wherever you get your podcast. You can contact us, contact eggchasers@gmail.com. You can find JB. Hello, JB.
Hello, Tim.
Find him on LinkedIn.
You can.
Talking all things financial advice with Beardmore financial advisors.
Beardmore and Co. independent financial advisors. But yeah, same.
You can find Phil at the Sale Harriers running track on a Monday night. Your ankle hold up all right, mate?
It did. You're
very runny today.
This old thing.
Yeah.
I bought this from Lovell Rugby, this top, actually.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Well, that means, Phil.
Very cheap.
That means you must be gearing up towards your big rugby comeback at the North Dorset Sevens for our Egg Chasers team.
Well, I've been running the last few weeks, and I've been running a little bit faster, but not
Don't
very fast
it,
at the track the last 2 weeks. And I am concerned. I'm definitely going to be at North Dorset Sevens on the 5th and 6th of July 2024. At North Dorset Rugby Club.
July.
But I'm unlikely to play, because the last game of rugby I played, I really genuinely only think the last month or so my ankle's been feeling normal. That is 15 months recovery from my last game.
Half a game.
And 80 something minutes. 70,
did you play? You didn't 70. Play that long, did you?
I came off with 3 minutes to go at the end.
Okay.
And apart from that, I played every minute, except for when you had to replace me in the first half when I lost a contact lens.
Oh, yes, I remember that.
So I played probably, 65 minutes, something like that. But yeah, I enjoy running. And particularly when I'm working away, which I do a lot, I like just being able to take a pair of trainers and a pair of shorts and just being able to like go wherever I am. And so not being able to run for 15 months or have like a bad running experience for 15 months has not been much fun, I must admit.
Yeah. Well, talking of not much fun physically, the CrossFit Open is a disaster for me this year. Disaster. Cardio workouts back to back. I don't know what's going on. If you could choose two workouts for me, I wouldn't be good at burpees over and over again and double unders. Dreadful. Dreadful.
Just when you, like, one thing I will say about double unders is it's quite impressive to people who don't do CrossFit that you can do a double under. Because that's what I found this week. Like, some friends of mine were like, oh my God, how can you do that?
Easy.
It's like, yeah.
Just gone through under fatigue.
Yeah.
So, on the North Dorset Sevens, if you are interested, and we're running at least two, possibly three teams,
I think.
Three teams.
We've got the Vets Tens. We've got the, we've got the Bin Juice Sevens, the Egg Chasers Bin Juice, and the Egg Chasers. I think there's a team even lower than Bin Juice.
Yeah, and I think also
that's in the Uber social competition.
So I'm gonna try and build a bit of a compound this year and just invite more social members. I'm sure there's loads of people that want to just come for a beer.
Yeah. Whether you're nearby North Dorset, or whether you just fancy coming along tremendous weekend, the drinking.
We could probably do an Egg Chasers Hall of Fame now. Well, that'd be Hugo.
Yes.
Handsome Matt.
Handsome Matt and Major League. And that's it, really. That'd be it in the Hall of Fame.
Well, yeah, but you're right, actually. Contact eggchasers@gmail.com if you fancy playing for one of our Sevens teams and or just fancy an amazing weekend in, what was the date again?
5th and 6th of July.
5th and 6th of July. Outstanding. That'll be one of the summer series.
In fact, I'll weekends. Yeah, it will. There's always some rugby on. So after you finish, there's always some...
South Africa v Ireland in Pretoria.
Yeah,
I know.
Which
that.
Is where you will
which
be.
Which is where I will be on that particular day. And by the way, the final bit of housekeeping, Egg Chasers Rugby on YouTube. Another 1,200 subscribers added,
well done, mate.
Added this week.
And I watched your post-match debrief, your hot takes after the game live from... That could only have been 5 minutes after final whistle.
Yeah. Was that Ireland-England?
Ireland-England. Yeah. We're definitely going to talk about this, obviously, on the game.
Your hot takes were good. Do you know whose hot takes were better?
Jamie Hughes' lips.
Did you see Danny Kerr's younger son?
Oh, awesome. A daughter, wasn't it?
Oh, was it?
Oh, she was amazing. Oh, I can't remember.
It was a small kid
who grabbed Brian O'Driscoll's microphone.
Yeah.
Amazing.
It was
so
great,
cute.
Great television.
So cute. Yeah, I watched that afterwards. Obviously, I didn't see it at the time, but the internet was talking about it. Yeah, wonderful. What a great weekend of Six Nations rugby, and we're definitely going to talk about that on this video. I think we're going to do a little...
Video?
Video, sorry.
Remember your roots.
Podcast. We're also going to do another Patreon podcast with a bit of a difference. We're going to try something a bit different, and it involves a copy of Grazia magazine.
Yes, it does.
So if you... help keep the lights on and support us and appreciate the 52 weeks of the year for over 10 years now, and you are a subscriber on Patreon, patreon.com/eggchasers. There's a special treat coming your way in addition to all the other content you get there.
Mm-hmm. So let's kick off with probably the biggest game of the weekend. Was it Nottingham Hartbury?
Just the Friday night game.
Friday night lights. What? You got any idea what we're talking about?
No idea.
3-0.
3-0.
3-0.
Wow.
That's right. It's definitely Hartbury, wasn't it?
It was. It was Nottingham hosting Hartbury.
Yes.
Wow.
And an epic JB scoreline.
Tell you what, that warms my heart. Who got all 3 points? Do we know? Which legend?
I can find out
for you.
It was Austin. I don't know who Austin is, but...
Sign him up. He's obviously a pressure guy.
I'm looking at the Hartbury team have got... I can only assume brothers at loose head and tight head, because it's highly unlikely that there would be non-brothers called Ben's Salomon hyphenated.
Wow.
And a second row called Lemon as well.
Love it. Oh, do you know what the oldest club fixture in the world is?
Is it Blackheath or something? Yeah.
Blackheath
versus
someone in London.
Richmond.
Blackheath Richmond is the oldest fixture. Yeah. and that is the fixture that I was at on Friday Night Lights.
Were you?
Oh, wow. Because you were obviously at Twickenham on the Saturday.
So I went down to stay with my brother, Nick, one of the coaches at Richmond. And just, I'm going to start going to more local lower league games.
Yeah, it's great.
It's awesome. I loved it. It was so good.
That's why I absolutely love going to... watch Odwinians if I can be involved in that club. It's a tiny amount of time that I was there, like all three games, it was just awesome. Just it's a great local club, but you find that all over the place, clubs that are suited for their local area, brilliant stuff. So, now Richmond, sorry to
no not at all,
came up in a conversation with Mark Evans on the last episode that you'll see that you'll hear in your
Economics episode
Economics.
Two.
And the reason was, is we're sort of making the argument like, well, when teams get relegated, what should they morph into? And I think Richmond's a great example of a team which tried to go too high, too fast, without the infrastructure. But broadly speaking, is where it should be now. I mean, they probably would want to do a bit better themselves, but they run four teams.
They do run four teams, right.
It's a good club. I mean, that's kind of what it should be.
So it's a fantastic club, and I've been to the Richmond Athletic Ground before. It was just on a Friday night. I think there were 1,200 people there.
Mark Bright's still playing.
Yeah,
is he?
Mark Bright's
still
playing.
Why did you not do a video with him?
I should have done. not only did I watch Mark Bright for the first time ever, legend.
What does he look like in the flash?
I mean, he looks like a 44-year-old man.
Does he?
Who somehow is still managing to turn out and play really well in National
One. Is he in amazing shape?
Is it for a 44-year-old man?
No. Is he just in amazing shape?
No, he's in good shape. Do you know what I found out about him, though? If he plays every league game for the rest of this season, he will reach 400 National League appearances.
Incredible.
Which is bonkers, isn't it?
Isn't it just? I mean, how are you good enough for 400 National League appearances, but nothing more?
Well, he made England sevens at the age of about 34 or 35.
Did he?
Yeah. Despite not being English, but he'd been in England for probably 10 years at that point.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible.
So I'll just...
Because I played against him when he was playing for Red Ruth, best part of 15 years ago. He was 28 when he first played National League rugby in England.
So
oh my God.
400 appearances since age 28.
And he obviously played...
Imagine how many appearances he would have had if he'd been here as a youngster.
An 18-year-old. But wow. he would have made an academy had he come across as a... Yeah. Oh, sorry, I could say come across or been in the country, born here.
So, do you know what the amazing thing is about that? So like, I could play tomorrow. The body isn't a problem. And I'm sure, by the sounds of it, his body is not a problem. I mean, if he's continually playing, he sounds like he's been relatively injury-free by the amount of games that he's racked up. It's the mental side of it. It just can't be bothered getting up for it. And you do have to be up for it. You can't play rugby if you're kind of not bothered. You've got to be seriously up for it. Yeah.
To play at that level as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to be up for it.
It's incredible. It's truly remarkable.
Yeah. So I feel lucky to have watched the man, the myth, the legend, and seen him score a try as well in a good Richmond win. But overall, I think that was what I came away thinking. It was the night before the Six Nations matches, and it was just a reminder about how good grassroots rugby is in the UK. And
well, the Richmond's not grassroots rugby.
Well, you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
You know what I mean. Drop
things
down,
which aren't elite.
Drop down a league. Championship. If you've got a championship club near you, if you've got a National One club near you, get to it because it's ace. And the clubhouse, it just felt so old school. Going into a proper rugby clubhouse there in the ground afterwards, it was packed with people.
The National League is probably a really good place to start watching your rugby if that's what you want to do. I went to watch Sale versus Cambridge when Cambridge came up to play them for, it was last year. I think everyone else was frozen off, but because there's some underfloor heating or something in Carrington, they could do it, something like that. But Sale FC, after the game, was absolutely rammed. It was a great atmosphere. Yeah, I'd say National League is probably a very good place to get your first taste of quality rugby.
Yeah, so go and find it. But let's get to the elite then. We spent 10 minutes and we haven't even mentioned the Six Nations matches.
So. Hang on a minute. You don't want to talk about... No, let's save Broughton Park for later.
Yeah,
save... Under-16s.
Rafi Quirk's Broughton Park under-16s.
Well, I mean, they'll have forgotten who Rafi Quirk is if you win the next game.
More on that later. But yeah, so Twickenham was Saturday. I was in London, in West London, for obviously I went down for Richmond. I thought, while I'm here, I might as well pop along to Twickenham as well. What a match.
Amazing, what a weekend. But
yeah, you're right.
What a match this Saturday was. This it's like England-Ireland.
Here's a question that was actually asked to Jamie George in the post-match interviews. It was the thought that I had immediately following the full-time. Was this the best England performance since the Rugby World Cup semi-final 2019?
Yeah, because his response was...
We've had some other good
the assertion was like the best attacking rugby or the most cohesive or something along those lines. He was like, well, we've had quite a few other good ones. He kind of gave a flippant response. Yeah. I think it was one of the best performances they've put in overall. And I see that more in the second half, because the first half, while there were some good things... There were some seriously bad things in that. For that first half, to have that much territory in possession and going 4 points down, having blown multiple lineouts in the opposition half, having Ty Byrne just pick the ball up from the back of a ruck, knock on multiple times, give multiple penalties away, have four attempts at goal missed, fluffed. Yep. So the first half, there were some bright shoots, but... It wasn't a great performance.
Well, you missed the biggest one of them all, which is, didn't they go in a half time behind?
Yeah,
going 4 points down.
Down. Yeah. Oh, sorry, did you say that?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's worth repeating.
It is worth repeating.
That is one for me. I was like, they played really well.
Well,
and they're down.
There was positive bits, but I was getting a bit frustrated because I was listening to the half time analysis. Sorry, messing about with my mic.
That's all right.
Listen to the halftime analysis, and they're talking about the positives. And yes, there were some positives. There's some great attack in patches, some good ambition in attack. The try was taken brilliantly. But all of those things, all those negatives I listed before, to have that much territory in possession and only get 8 points on the board and to concede 12, I thought the first half was not great.
Well, I'm going to put a different spin on that because I thought it was a great first half. The reason I thought it was a good first half is because I know England can do all the things which you've listed, which they were terrible at. And what I've not seen is that attacking intensity, and I thought that was the important part. Because if England can attack like they did, and if they can get their combinations right and get that cohesion, we know they can do the other bits, because we've seen it in spades in either the semi-final of the World Cup, we've seen it previously in the Six Nations. I know that Borthwick, if he's got one thing up his sleeve, it's the ability to fix a line out. So that didn't bother me. The only thing that really bothered me was the scoreline.
But on the attack, first try was brilliant.
It was, wasn't it?
So it was excellent. The rest of the attack, they put some good phases together, but again, they had the problem of rarely getting above 5-6 phases without knocking it on or just not looking after the pill and forming a ruck and having Van der Fleer or Aki, who were both superb over the ball, or Tyburn, who all three were superb over the ball, just come in and pinch it or win a penalty.
You're talking about like three of the best operators in the world at that. That's the first thing I'd say. And also, they were looking clinical. They were making ground. Now, I've seen them play before, and they run out of ideas. And I think that is a huge difference. And George Ford, I thought, he managed the tempo of that attack really nicely. Really, really nicely. Granted, it wasn't good. But this is the dilemma that modern rugby faces, which is, as you compress that field, it gets more and more dangerous to attack. And everybody gets turned over after six phases. I would say after six phases, you're in the danger zone, like big time, which is why we kick it away so much. It's very hard to attack and to score.
I think there were both personnel decisions, which we can talk about for Steve Borthwick, mm-hmm. and there was a mindset shift, and that you've already referenced the first try, Phil, and that was the most pleasing thing for me in the early stages was George Furbank received a kick. Mm-hmm. I can't remember who kicked it. I think
it was James Lowe.
James Lowe. Big booming James Lowe kick.
Yeah.
George Furbank collected it, and I'm not necessarily complaining exactly what you've just talked about, JB. I wouldn't have complained if he'd put an up and under back the other direction, because territory is so important at international level.
And it's only 5 minutes into the game as well.
5 minutes into the game, exactly. But what did George Furbank do? He made a massive arcing run diagonally across the pitch to link up with Tommy Freeman.
Yeah.
And just that motion in itself, it led to the try ultimately, but just the decision to do that rather than put boot to ball and play territory worlds apart from where they've
been. I wonder if he is the antidote to what I was saying before, which is, not before, but a few episodes again, which is not a company man. Wasn't playing the percentages. I would have forgiven him for putting up an up and under, definitely.
Yep. Yep.
Because, well, like Phil said, they weren't going very far after six phases. Makes sense. But, you know, he just plays what's in front of him. He's a weird guy, George Furbank, as in he seems to want to play rugby. And that's a very rare thing in today's modern rugby player. But he wants to. He goes forward. And he's got a lovely set of hands as well. He's not like, I was thinking about Marcus Smith playing fullback. And he just seems a little bit rushed, a little bit frantic from fullback. George Furbank seems incredibly smooth.
I really like George Furbank.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, sorry, go on.
Oh, no, it's... I did wonder if what probably a lot of people have been wondering, having seen Freddie Stewart, who's so good at some things but maybe not so good at others, is it worth the risk of people putting the high ball up and under to him and targeting him like that? No, it's not to say he's bad at the high ball. He's just probably not as good as Stewart, who is probably certainly top two or three in the world at that. Mm. But I think it absolutely is, because he gives so much more in attack. Both his pace is better, his feet are better, and his hands are better.
Yeah,
so yeah, 100%.
You get more all-round, and that means you get more out of the other players, like Freeman, like Lawrence, who found himself on the end of that first try.
Yeah, so Furbank arced across, linked up with Freeman to Slade to Lawrence. Simple.
Well, I think Furbank got his hands on it a second time.
He did.
I think he got
You're right.
It went out.
He was the first receiver, wasn't he?
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah,
I think he was the second,
side.
And it was then Furbank Slade Lawrence.
So
on that left hand side,
this is a stretch.
Might have been Ford Furbank.
Maybe Slade, maybe Lawrence. Maybe
anyway,
that.
Yeah, but
Furbank got his hands on twice in that.
A bit of a stretch, but that Furbank performance reminded me of another player who was also playing today, and the performance I wanted to see from him in an England shirt for the longest time, which is Henry Slade. So, if you think about...
He was great.
We'll come on to him in a second. But I've wanted Henry Slade to have that kind of impact on a game for a long time. Like that second receiver, pair of hands, he can kick, he can run, he can do all that sort of stuff. But I've never actually seen that from him. That's exactly what Furbank did. Exactly. On Slade, that's not to knock him for this game, I mean, it's like all the dials were perfectly in alignment. He had to take a lot out of his game to be effective. He is a very, very nice link man, very nice distributor, very discreet, but just did everything right.
I agree with you, and I think one of the things which will possibly be overlooked a bit for Slade is how much he was important in shutting down Ireland. Now, the blitz defence is still a work in progress. It took South Africa a long time, and at times it didn't work in that game against the James Lowe try, where Crowley just managed to step Henry Slade, just stepping
the
right
second,
out.
The second James Lowe try. Yeah,
he managed to spot the blitz, step him, get the ball to the outside, and James Lowe was in. It didn't work, but overall, across an 80-minute performance, Henry Slade's rugby brain, which we know is fantastic, was absolutely instrumental at just causing chaos in Ireland's attacking shape and stopping them from doing what they wanted to do.
I think it's about having stability in that midfield, because I thought the other guy who had an outstanding game with his carrying, with his tries, all the rest of it, was Lawrence. Now, I don't want Lawrence to play 12 ever, but if he is going to play 12, I want him to play like he did this week, which is 12 on his back, but popping up in situations which make him incredibly dangerous. Like on the wing, for instance, he is incredibly dangerous, carrying the ball. And having Henry Slade, I mean, really, you'd want those two swapped round, I guess. But it works, so just leave it.
I think there is a bit of fluidity, and we saw that in the forward pack. Ollie Chesimo, I also thought, was ace.
He is ace, isn't he?
He is. But he was packing down at number 8 in defensive scrums.
Yeah, I saw that.
So it's like the number on your back and the role you actually execute in different parts of the pitch can be fluid.
And with the centres as well, Lawrence was popping up on the wing, and it's helped by the fact that you've got two so big, strong wingers, because Faye Wobosso and Freeman were both popping up through the middle to do some heavy traffic
a lot
carrying.
Of it.
That's
a
what you
lot.
Do, Henry Arundel. If you're not getting the ball, you go looking for it.
Yes.
Why do you hate
him? I don't hate him.
It's just because Owen Farrell hates him. It's literally because Owen Farrell hates him.
I felt good. It felt like bittersweet being in the stadium, knowing Owen Farrell was there, but not being able to watch him play.
Faye Wobosso is, I think he might be legit good.
I think he's legit strong and fast.
Yeah, I can't work out if he's strong or is he powerful. I know they sound like the same thing, they're not.
The catch under his own sticks.
Yes, that's some balls, isn't it? That's some balls on your first test start.
And England are hunting a win, and the carry on the right-hand touchline when he powered in.
Yeah,
just ahead of the drop goal.
He just doesn't care, does he? He just doesn't mind.
And the carry he made for the Furbank try, which was scrappy from England. There was a bit of, I can't remember, there was a kick through from Ireland. Someone scooped it up, but then got half scragged and offloaded. Ben Earl offloaded to Faye Wobosso, and England were kind of like drifting backwards. And he made about 15 yards forwards through heavy traffic, which just open the field up down the left-hand wing, left-hand side. Yeah, speed, power, strength. Yeah.
Well, having Freeman and Faye Wobosso, because they are both fast, obviously. I mean, all Premiership wings are fast. But having them as auxiliary carriers popping up everywhere, it's a real, real dangerous threat they have. And they run so differently, too. They offer such different threats. Yeah, they're both absolutely class. Well, Freeman is definitely world-class. I've got no doubt about Freeman.
World-class potential.
I think he's there. I really think he's there.
No, you can't say that after a couple of games.
I've seen enough.
It depends on your definition of world-class.
I was going to say, we need to standardise what the definition of world-class means, because it's a word that gets thrown around.
I've seen enough of this guy in the Premiership to think he's a world-class player. Favourite, not so much. But
my definition of world-class would be if there was two 23-match squads.
Yes, I like that.
Of the best players in the world. So you're generally going to get four or five in many positions where there are two of. Half, you're going to get four.
Between two and three in any given position.
It would be between four, because you want both teams. So say...
Yeah, but there's only two men wearing 12 and maybe one...
I'm saying like centres, wingers. Right, okay, cool. Right, so like fine. Scrum halves, there are fine. Going to be four fine, scrum fine, halves. Fine, fine, hookers, fine. There are going to be four hookers.
Tommy Freeman at this point would not make the top four or five wingers.
He isn't Pernod.
He's not Pano, he's not Arenta, he's not Colby, he's not he's not Will Jordan.
Or Talia.
Or Talia.
Ah, he's better than Talia.
He's better. I'm not sure
he's
about
not
that.
He's not quite James Lowe yet.
Yeah. He's better than, I'd have him over James Lowe. James Lowe's great. There again. Like
Duane van der Merwe.
I mean, the problem is...
That's quite a lot of wingers I've just named
The problem
there.
Is, with that thing about only four players in these positions, is like, how do you want to play? Because I never actually thought of Duane van der Merwe as a world-class winger, but he undoubtedly is, in some respects. Like, well, who would you pick? I mean, imagine if your choice was like... Orenza or van der Merwe. They're two very different guys.
They are. I think maybe more relevant, without going too far down the whole Lions rabbit hole, but do you think Tommy Freeman will be in the British and Irish Lions squad?
I'd have thought so, because of his positional flexibility as well.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if he's in that. So that's like a slightly lower bar, but still a very high bar. I would say he should be in there.
I came up with an idea for testing how good England players are, hypothetically, although... It might have failed after today's result, which is how good would he be for Wales? So if you watch him, you go, how good would this guy be for Wales? And the other's like, yeah, he'd be a lion. If he played for Wales, he'd be a lion.
I'll tell you what, we can always come back to England, but let me just jump into the emails a little bit and throw the spotlight on Ireland for a second. We've got an email here, contactedchasers@gmail.com from Alex Feeney, who says, a lot's been said about Ireland's great production line, the academies and the school system. Do you think it's that great?
Yes.
My point being, Cian Healy and Conor Murray are still the next best in their position, despite getting on in years. Tadhg Byrne developed at the Scarlets of all places. Peter Amani's getting on. Jameson Gibson-Park, Aki Lowe, all project players. Mac Hansen predominantly played in Oz. And Ollie Jaeger developed in New Zealand. Does the system really deserve the hype? It's a reasonable question. There's some justification for it there. It
massively does. What he's doing there, listing the old guys... I mean, aren't they just a product of a fantastic academy system? That's what I would firstly point out. And secondly, I'll point out that this is international rugby and experience does matter. It's not everything. You know, as we find out, young lads can come in, like Fairway Boson, do a great job. But it does massively matter to have these guys in. If anything, you know, the Ireland squad benefits from the experience of lads like Conor Murray and all the rest of it. But yeah, I don't think Conor Murray is the second best in his position, actually. I just think he's got the experience to drive that team home should it be needed, even though he didn't this weekend. As for the rest of it, I mean, come on. It's not a massive country, but look at the standard of their second rows. I mean, where do you find second rows? Even England have struggled recently for second rows, and they've got them coming out their ears. Their back row is absolutely immense. So, no, I think it's not necessarily the number of the players that they're producing, but the quality is quite incredible. And then you supplement it with the project players. That's what the magic is. It's getting the balance right.
And they have the IRFU, and this is not to the academies or anything like that, or the schooling, but the IRFU seem to control the project players and control who plays where to a high degree that leads to success. Unlike, say, I don't know, Wales, who it just all seems to be but it's totally incoherent.
Yeah.
There's no overarching strategy, which you can say what there is for Ireland.
Do you want to say something interesting? The chief exec of the IRFU, is his surname Brown? I want to say it's Brown.
Doesn't matter. Yeah, he didn't get the headlines that he someone like Sweeney or Dodson would get.
Yeah. Well, Mark Dodson with his £1 million bonus, by the way, if he is.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, I'm pretty sure it's Guy Brown, and I'll have to be fact-checked on this. I'm sure his salary is like one-third of what Sweeney's is.
Wouldn't surprise me at all.
One-third. Now, I'll double-check that, and Dodson with his £1 million bonus gets paid more than both of them, which is incredible.
Probably gets more than both of them combined. Bonus. His bonus is as much as their salaries combined.
So Scotland, who I mentioned their under-20s have been struggling in recent years. Did you see the Scotland under-20s?
Yeah, pumped. They're not
47-14 against
Italy.
Italy.
They're not in the... Italy. Scotland will not be in the under-20s.
They got relegated,
it's just shocking, and there's some sevens issues as well, so yeah, it's an absolute mess. But just here's an interesting email as well, contactedchasers@gmail.com. I want to actually let's just focus on Ireland for a second. Can I just
say
I loved Andy Farrell's response to the defeat. I'd love to know what him and Steve Borthwick were having a go at half time.
I like both of their reactions. Did you go to the were you in the the post-match interviews in person.
Yeah, I heard what they said. They obviously shrugged it off. But
both of them basically gave the same response, like, well, we're old mates, just having a chat. Good to see him, good to catch up.
Good to catch up, love it.
Good to catch up. But Andy Farrell's response to defeat was basically to say, and I've seen variations of this answer in different interviews, but we've been really good at winning. I'm looking forward to seeing the response to defeats, and we want a no-blame culture. We want to make sure we use this as a moment to get better. And he just, when they win and have great wins, he just seems like he keeps it simmered.
The problem is,
and then when they lose, he doesn't.
Yeah, it's not
bonkers.
The end of the world when you win.
They're going to win another Six Nations tournament, which is no small feat.
But it's not what they want, though, is it? It's like they've got to another European Cup final. It's not what they want. They've got to another quarter final. Not what they want. It's just they need to be. I'm not saying do better, but
a Six Nations championship is an achievement every time you win one. Winning four out of five games will be really, really solid, and it.
But it's not where they want to be.
No, it's not where they want to be, but that shouldn't mean, and I think Andy Farrell's absolutely right in this, and it was the right response after the Rugby World Cup. Yes, incredibly disappointed with a quarterfinal exit. However, they had a great couple of years building up to it, and they lost by the finest of margins to a really good team who had a great game on their day. And they just came up in a one-off match against an opponent who raised their game, and Ireland were not quite at that level. And still, the remarkable thing about Ireland is, they didn't deserve to be within 1 point. They should have been gone and dead and buried, as Phil already mentioned. It's remarkable that they were only within 1 point.
Yeah, so there is a value, isn't there, in that very Saracenian, I just made that word up.
I like it.
Yeah, Saracenian way of thinking, which is, it'll just be gradual improvements. We're not going to win everything tomorrow, but we will eventually win everything. And I don't mind it so much, particularly in international rugby, because international rugby is brutal and you can lose your job for not being where you're supposed to be. On the other hand, you are supposed to be where you're supposed to be. So I'm kind of torn. Like,
I'd say they are where they're supposed to be, the best team in the Northern Hemisphere.
Yeah, you can look at it that way, but they should also have won the Grand Slam. The true Grand Slam, which is two Grand Slams back to back.
The Super Slam.
The Super Slam. Like, they should also be getting further than the quarterfinals. Like, there's a John Madden approach, isn't there? John Madden said something like, everyone asked him if he felt under pressure because he kept on making the playoffs but never winning it. He said, no, I keep making the playoffs. It's absolutely fine. Which is a way to look at it, I guess. And if they, I don't know, but they just keep on not winning. This is Leinster and it's Ireland. They keep on not winning. And are Grand Slams good enough? Because last time they won a Grand Slam, I believe it cost them a quarterfinal and the Heineken Cup. So maybe it'll make them win the Heineken Cup. Who knows?
Maybe. I think they'll be rightly disappointed not to win the Grand Slam because they are the best team in the tournament. But I think they'll still be pleased to, because they are going to win back-to-back Six Nations.
Failing something mad happening next weekend. I think Ireland can even lose and still, they're likely to still win the tournament with a losing bonus point.
Yeah,
so if they get a losing bonus point, England win, putting a 5-point win against France, England would need to overcome an 83-point deficit. So England would have to beat France by 83 points more than Ireland lose to Scotland by. Or the total would have to be 83. Yeah. It would have to be plus 84.
The total of deficit in would have to be.
So Scotland put 40
be
points on Ireland, England put 40 points on France, plus a bit more.
Plus it would have to be a 40-point loss by Ireland and a 40-point win by England, and it's still not enough. England would then still need a further 4 points.
But they're in play, then.
If you get to that point,
bets are off.
Well, this is the perfect.
Then it would just need an unconverted try for England to win last minute.
This is the perfect moment to bring in this email from Finnan Letts. Thank you very much, Finnan. From West Sussex, contact@headchasers@gmail.com. He says, big fan, blah. Quick one. Everyone very excited about Marcus Smith's drop goal and how he'd showed shades of Johnny, etc.
Did he?
But why did he do it? We had penalty advantage in front of the sticks.
Yep.
A try gives us a bonus point and we're 3 points behind Ireland, unlikely but possible, instead of four. Basically impossible for us to win. Did he put getting a personal highlight ahead of the team's tournament chances?
I don't think they thought about it. I think they were just prioritising getting the win.
I think that's it. It would have been great to have thought that someone would have been thinking in those terms.
Yeah.
In the moment, and it's not a bad point that he makes.
Yeah. Maybe someone, not necessarily one of the players, but someone in the coaching staff should have been thinking that and communicating it. But it's still.
I suppose in the moment, you'd have to have got that message on whilst there was penalty advantage, and the ball was in play.
So. Or you know we've got to win and score four tries, I guess. But then you can't jeopardise winning just to get. You can't jeopardise winning just to get the four tries.
There would have been no discussion in the entire week, 2 weeks of England building up to the Ireland match. There would be absolutely zero discussion of, lads, we're focusing on a 4-5 point win in order to try and win the championship. It was just beat Ireland.
Yes.
So it's a really interesting point you make, Finnan.
So have you read the Oliver Brown article in The Times?
No.
No, me neither.
I'm going to link this back to Owen Farrell. So a lot of the Owen Farrell stuff, which you heard when he retired, was nonsense. Like, all the abuse, all the, you know, it's the press's fault, yada, yada, yada. No. Like, I don't ever believe that there's any real abuse from the press.
I was going to say, that's an opinion. It's not an opinion which Mark McCall shares.
Well, he's wrong. He's simply wrong. I mean, I don't care how clever Mark McCall is at rucks on this. If he said that, he's stupid, because he's wrong. But reading the Oliver Brown piece today, I understand why Owen Farrell was fed up with the press. Because instead of writing what he should have written, which is Marcus Smith was a perfect foil for an excellent George Ford display, he wrote something along the lines of, this was the passing of the torch from George Ford to Marcus Smith. And I cannot think of a more stupid narrative to write after watching that game than that. What Marcus Smith did, he dropped a goal, and it was great. It was the right thing to do. He gets the praise for it. But it was not the passing of the torch. And you can just see, can't you, that after a great win, which George Ford was instrumental in, by the way, what the press can write, or what a senior writer at the Telegraph will write, is this was passing of a torch from like a poor player, not a poor player, but a player who's getting past it to
on his
the
way
next
out.
Best thing. Like, no wonder Owen Farrell was fed up.
I'll dovetail that with some comments from quite a lot of fans, which seem to be focusing on the missed kicks, which, you know, Marcus Smith's had games where his kicking boots have been left at home, like, and in very recent memory as well.
And I mentioned the missed kicks before, not targeting George Ford, just as the overall malaise of England in that first half.
Yeah.
And I don't think George Ford had a particularly great game. He, to me, is still England's best 10.
Do you know, I thought his pass selection was great.
So I was going to say, a lot of fans have seemed to weirdly, rather than just enjoying the win and saying the 23 men that were there, in whatever composition they were, and whether one starts, one's on the bench, doesn't really, England do not, the thing I keep saying, it doesn't, and this has been the case for years, it doesn't matter who's wearing 10 for England, they're all amazing. It's more about the rest of the team and how the coach wants to set them up, because they will execute whatever game plan you want. But so there's quite a lot of fans going, oh, George Ford needs to go, he missed those kicks.
That's nonsense.
That is just total nonsense.
The way you think about it, in my mind, is look at what South Africa did. They got to the World Cup final playing with one type of fly half, and then when they thought Libbock was not maybe the guy for it, because this final is going to be super attritional and you need your points because that's the only place they're going to come from, then they swap the fly-offs.
Now, 31 minutes into the semi-final.
The secret to this win on the weekend was keeping Ireland constantly guessing and on the back foot. And you can only do that. I mean, I know you'll disagree with this, Tim, but I think only George Ford could do that, because he is such a good playmaker. He controls the tempo of the game so well when he's passing the ball. I've seen it for Sale, seen it for Bath. I mean, if you remember him at Bath, he was actually more like Marcus Smith then. And I think now he's more on the Owen Farrell side. But he can do it all. He can do it all. And I think that was the secret to beating Ireland, continuously keeping them on the back foot and not giving them the ball.
Let me read you this email then. Alexander Jameson, this came in about an hour ago, so you won't have read this one. He says, love the pod, blah. Is Ford the most underrated fly half of the past decade? His distribution on the gain line is up there with the best in the world, in my opinion.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And was the main reason, alongside Mitchell's speed from the rucks, that we were finding gaps in the Irish defence. All I heard at Twickenham and in articles post-game that it should be Smith in, Ford out, just because Ford missed a kick in front of the posts. It happens to the best. And a couple out wide. Never understand the abuse he gets, even after being so crucial in the win, and not his fault that he has had to stick with a kick-based game plan for the past 4 years.
I just
want to
stop with that word. It's not abuse. Stop using the word abuse. Okay. It's not abuse.
All right.
Criticism. Says, yeah, it's not abuse.
Okay, he says, Smith, great off the bench too, but Ford deserves more credit. What do you guys think? Well, I think you've just heard.
We're all big Ford fans. Yeah. And Ford, it's remarkable. So that was his 94th or 95th cap.
Yeah.
And it is remarkable that a player with 94 caps for England, England are notoriously hard to get caps because there's a lot of talent coming through, and England perhaps historically don't appreciate the cohesion that other teams do appreciate. It's remarkable that someone who's got so many caps for such a good, such a big team can be underrated, but I think he is. I genuinely do think he's underrated by many people.
Yeah, he is and he's not. Okay, do you know what George Ford is? He's the best fly half that you can get if you're a Premiership club, providing you're not Saracens or Harlequins. He's like the best for everyone else because those two are not available. Everyone else bids their socks off to get George Ford to play for them.
Leicester, Bath, Leicester, Sale.
Yeah, exactly. And I think he's probably got one more move in him before the end of his career.
I don't know if he will do, just because of he's kind of home now.
I can see him going back to Bath.
If he's going to go anywhere...
Finn back to France for even more
Ford to France for more money. If Farrell's going to France for what will be an astronomical amount of money,
an extra stint in Tigers,
Ford, whatever pays you the most money, George.
Yeah,
it should be that.
He's got one more. I think he's got one more move within the Premiership in him.
And Tim, if George Ford got lots and lots and lots and lots of cash for a move to France, who would he contact?
Oh, personally,
he couldn't, because unfortunately I can only deal with people inside of the UK. But hypothetically, he should contact Beardmore and go.
Yes, okay,
100%.
So he seals an enormous. Finn goes back to France. Ford seals an enormous move to Bath.
Oh,
then
Beardmore and go. Absolutely
perfect.
Yeah, I just cannot leave England without just saying George Martin's an absolute beast.
Oh my word, isn't he?
I was a little bit nervous around Martin and Chesson, because I know they're big lumps. It was it was 100%
the
right.
And they pick them in the opposite way I would pick them.
I would probably, Marrow.
If you were watching Egg Chasers Rugby YouTube video in the week building up, that was exact. With the exception, I actually put, I think it was the exact England team that I selected. With Chesson at six. So, you know, some of us understand these things, some don't.
As a man that understands these things, you tell me why. Why do you do that? Because I would have done it the other way around.
I think Chesson's more mobile than Martin.
I think Martin's more explosive and would work better off the flank.
And I think Itoji's more mobile than both of them.
Possibly. George
Which
Martin.
Is why I'd put Itoji at six.
The other thing I've heard props in interviews rave about how good it is scrummaging with George Martin behind him.
That's interesting. That is interesting. Right, there you go. That is the answer.
That makes sense.
So, a certain second row that has played for England that occasionally listens to the podcast was saying that he goes to six because Morrow is very good behind the scrum.
Because Morrow's not enormous.
No, but he's very good.
He's not like a Tau Fifanua or an Etzebeth or a Will Skelton. One of those boys.
Mm.
That's interesting to hear.
England still are missing a few players, though, aren't they? Being candid, they do still need an extra tight head.
Front row, yes.
Definitely.
Yeah, 1,000,000%.
I mean,
definitely.
I know Jamie George is a hooker. I'd still get rid of him. And I think Marler should be the starter.
Well, he's announced his own retirement date, I think. It's end of the season, is it? He's going to be
Marler.
Marler, I think.
Has he?
I think he has. Or maybe that's international retirement. I thought I saw that he was saying he was going to retire. Anyway,
maybe England needs an extra loose head.
Yeah.
To be fair, I thought Genge did have a good game.
Genge did have a good game. Yeah, that's there's no two ways about that.
Did no criticism from this game at all.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you who didn't have a good game, or was quiet, and I was really disappointed by this. I wanted to see McCarthy really have a go at England.
Yeah.
I didn't see any of him, really. I can't remember a single thing he did.
No, he was very quiet. But a lot of the big island ball carriers were kept quiet.
Yeah, I didn't see much of Van der Flair, didn't see much of Doris.
Ty Furlong didn't see much carrying. The most notable forward, probably, Caelan Doris worked very hard in attack and defence, and Van der Flair had a good game over the ball. Yeah.
Tadhg Byrne in that first half got Ireland out of jail a bunch of times.
That steal on the which was criminal for England.
Just a quick one. Do you know what the possession stats are? Because I actually don't know.
No idea.
I've got it in front of me now.
Where'd you get it? Where'd you get it from? By the way,
This is ESPN. They're back doing it, they only do big games.
Okay.
So possession, England had 55% in the first half, 50% in the second half. Territory, England had 66% in the first half, 54% in the second half.
Interesting. Joe Marler's announced said that he will stop playing rugby in 2025.
Interesting.
He's got this season and next. He's got next season.
Yeah, finish this season.
I feel he's at the height of next season. I think he's playing absolutely brilliant rugby.
If Dan Cole,
he's one of the few true, and I do mean this, world class players available to England.
I would say he is a world class player. Yeah, no complaints there.
And just as a bloke, and I won't name the person who this was because they didn't want me to, but you saw when you came to my little Christmas drinks gathering.
I remember,
you saw the letter that Joe Marler wrote.
Oh, yeah, didn't I?
A young rugby player in the Manchester area.
Yeah.
He was a prop who, he wrote him.
It's a weird message out, you'll never be as good as me, stop trying. I don't know why he wrote that.
It was lovely. It was stuff along the lines of, I can't remember verbatim what it was. I've got a picture of it on my phone somewhere, but it was like, I hear you're really good, you know, and I hear you, you know, there's a bit of stuff going down at school. Just stick with it. Rugby's great. I hear you're great and you're a good bloke.
Scrummage hard.
Keep at it, mate. Scrummage hard. Yeah. Exactly. No, it's great.
Train hard, scrummage hard.
So he's just a one-off, Joe Marler. So, yeah. Enjoy him while we got him.
Interesting thing for the game. Oh, sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say, on that, Danny Kerr's 100th cap. When he came on, the crowd rose to their feet, massive round of applause. The stadium DJ decided to play music over the top.
Ugh, God.
Like, I don't mind a bit of music in the bowl. I don't mind
only there to watch Rag and Bone Man at half time.
Oh, 100%. There are times to shut the hell up.
Yeah.
Danny Kerr, crowd up on their feet, just a classic round of applause. Na 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 na.
God.
I was going to mention one. Interesting little tactical quirk that Ireland employed for the first. Well, I think I only noticed it for the first 3 minutes until they won that penalty. Breaking around the ruck. They picked up, Van der Flier picked up from the ruck. Then there was a little ball back inside from Gibson Park. And then there was another, I think there was three attempts at like little snipes in and around the ruck, Ireland got a lot out of it, and it forced England to kind of honeypot to the point where they got the first penalty. I wonder what they've seen from England. And it might have been that they've seen something from England around there, and then once England are alive to it, they close that down, but the intent then is there's more space elsewhere because they've closed that down. But I never noticed it outside of that first 2-3 minutes.
That is interesting. I've got nothing more to say about this. That was a really good England win, and I hope they replicate it against France, because that'll be a fascinating game then.
Yeah,
that France game, we'll talk about that later. That will be an interesting game, I think.
No, I didn't see Scotland Italy. I didn't watch the highlights. So do you want to talk about Wales instead?
Either or, but I loved that Italy Scotland game.
Yeah.
Well, let's save that for.
You want to go make time. You go make a brew in 10 minutes.
All right, cool.
Wales.
Well, a brief interlude while we're there then. I've already mentioned Richmond. You've mentioned CrossFit Open. You've mentioned your ankles better.
Oh, getting better. Yeah, better than it was.
Getting better. We've mentioned North Dorset Sevens. Contact chasers@gmail.com if you want to play, or just come along for a boozy weekend.
Yes.
Or a non-boozy weekend. All are welcome.
Oh, yeah. Whatever you want to do.
Absolutely. Just briefly, I will say I had one of those. You know, sometimes things happen in your life and you're like, as it's happening, you're like, I'm going to remember this. And I think I might have said this last year when it was a quarterfinal win or something, but semi-final, Broughton Park, Raffy Quirk's Broughton Park under 16 semi-final against Fylde in the Lancashire Cup. And just the hug with my son after he'd gone out and physically dominated his opponent for
yeah.
70 minutes.
Sort of six?
Six, yeah. Nice. No, I jest, but they had an awesome game. And yeah.
What was the final score?
19-14 win for
Was he involved in bundling the Fylde number 8 into touch?
Manhandling him.
Just before they scored a try, might have happened.
Yeah.
Did he bundle him in such and then take his scholarship off him?
Kirkham Grammar Scholarship.
I'll be having that, thank you.
But I was asking the guys at the club, and the last team to have got to a Lancashire Cup final was Raffy Quirk's Broughton Park team.
And, makes sense.
And before that, it goes back decades. So it's
Does it really?
Yeah, it's a rare and special thing.
Mm.
Sam McIntyre's under 16s team were pretty good. That was the last one which I remember being like actually producing some useful players for Broughton Park.
Mm. Well, as I've already said this before. That's one of the things I hope. Give it 5 years, and
they're all coming to Toc H.
Stroll down to Broughton Park on a Saturday afternoon, and I'll see a few of those lads turning out for the ones. That's what it's all about.
Superb.
Did you ever Absolutely. Win? Did you ever? Because Lancashire. Because I will say, I won the County Cup. The only final I've ever played in my whole rugby career was the County Cup final. Colts, we won that, but that was Berkshire, which is quite a small county. Lancashire is legit, isn't it? How did you ever get on?
Senior Colts, we won it. So my last,
did you?
Yeah, last oh, before going to uni, I was playing 12 in that. We played, I think it was Liverpool St Helens. It was one of the St Helens teams in a really, really hard game.
What colour really? Shirts? Do you remember?
Green.
Oh, West Park.
West Park, St Helens.
So, like, but I bet that's still one of the memories that's fondest when you think
about
it.
Yeah. It was good. That was about 2002, 2003. Long time
that's
ago.
Awesome.
I had a cup final which we lost against.
Is this one where you threw your medal in a hedge?
Yeah.
I love that story.
Yeah. So, it was Lancashire Cup. I was announced to much embarrassment to myself and much enjoyment to everyone else. It's like, when they said back row, I said first back row sub is Mark McConnell, second is JB, as in like you're not getting on. And then I did get on, and I immediately scored. I scored in like the 79th minute after 1 minute being on. So one try a minute. Imagine if I had started. We did lose, and I was so disgusted with my lack of game time and the fact that we lost because it's pathetic that I got my medal and I just threw it in the hedge and then I got in my car and went home because I'm a team player.
Well, it's May Bank Holiday weekend. And it's against, I don't know where it is actually, you'll find out, but it's against, if it's somewhere local, then you have to come along and watch, but it's against Waterloo.
Is it? That'll be a banger.
So beat Preston Grasshoppers, now beat Fylde, now Waterloo.
So who was on the other side of the
story,
draw?
That's some storied rugby clubs, isn't it?
Who was on the other side of the draw?
The other semi-final was Liverpool Collegiate against Waterloo.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying that they're two weaker clubs, but they certainly don't have the history that the two clubs that you do.
Waterloo does, doesn't it?
Waterloo does have, yeah.
Do they have the link to the private school? Is it Merchant Taylor maybe or something?
Mm.
Who is the private school? No, there is a
I'm sure there is a Liverpool Merchant Taylor school.
I'm not sure, but they're you would say team. The more senior club. I mean, Waterloo is a fine club, by the
yeah,
way.
Yeah, it's a great club.
But it's not got the pedigree of the two that you've beaten so far, I'd say.
Preston Grasshoppers.
Merchant Taylors, yeah, Crosby. There's a Merchant Taylors at Liverpool.
Never ever played Waterloo before.
Have you not?
There's Merchant Taylors. So what's this scale of this map? About a kilometre away from Waterloo?
Yeah, I thought there was, because there's a sevens there.
So, the team today we played from Fylde was just stacked with Kirkham Grammar lads. We've got lads from comprehensive schools in inner city Manchester.
Good.
So that's how we like it.
Good. Good, have that.
Yeah.
Wonderful stuff. Well done. Well done, Broughton Park under 16s. Fantastic.
Well, now I need to tap up Raffy Quirk to come and come along and coach the boys for a couple
of sessions.
Yeah,
I'm sure a lot of people would. I remember before we went to the one of the finals at Broughton Park, so it wasn't the final I played, it was the one before that. We had a few Sale Sharks down to help us with the lineouts. In fact, it was Pete Anglesey when he was still playing.
Oh, nice.
Mm. Yeah, really, really cool. Cool session. We just did our lineouts, and he said good or bad, and didn't really add much. But it was good that he was there. Before we played last year, we had Tommy Taylor coming down to Toc H.
What a boy!
That was class. Reuben Birch and a few, I think Tom Curry and maybe one other, are actively coaching at Stockport.
Oh, interesting.
And I think that Will Cliff is still knocking about Sandbach, although he has basically retired. He has retired.
England A prop James Harper is coaching at the mighty Manchester Metropolitan University.
Is he? Mm. Huge, isn't he? Yeah, he's absolutely massive.
Big boy.
Yeah, he will do well. It just needs a little bit more time.
Anyway, Scotland, Italy. What a wicked game. Do you want to go make a cup of tea?
Wales, France.
Yeah, fresh in the mind. You've been saying it ever since day one. And you were only wrong in how right you were. Rio Dyer is ace.
He's ace, isn't he?
He is good.
He's so good.
I was looking at him today, I was like, Christ, I love this boy. He's not world-class. Like, he is about...
world-class effort.
Yeah.
Yeah. Effort. Yeah.
I mean, this is why I love him so much. I just love him. But he's about 15 kilograms off and 4 inches, isn't he? Like, at least. But you can't fault his work rate.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want a guy to lead you, he's like... If wings could be captains, and I'm sure theoretically they can, they can't really. He would be a captain.
Yeah, are there any... Gareth Thomas was captain from Jan 15.
Ian Evans. Ian Evans,
back
yeah.
in the day.
Both Welsh so far, the only ones we've picked.
Jason Robinson, but I think it might have been fullback.
Yeah, and that was only very briefly. It wasn't he wasn't the captain.
Captain.
No, he was. He was the captain.
Oh, yeah, as in for, like...
He was the actual... For a Six Nations campaign or something
like that. I'm sure he was. I'm absolutely positive that he was. Positive.
So that would be in between 2003 when Jono retired and 2007. But then Tindall was made captain.
Was that
after then?
He was a fullback. I'm going to call fullbacks wingers for now. Chris Patterson.
Chris Patterson.
Yeah,
I was wondering, that's a good...
That's probably the most permanent back three captain.
Permanent, yeah.
Captain
and Hoggy was for a bit.
Yeah Hoggy, that's true.
Course, yeah.
Kenny Logan, was he captain?
I thought about that.
No, I don't think he was. Maybe not. No,
maybe,
you're right,
again,
actually.
Maybe for a game.
New Zealand, I was thinking them.
Not often.
It's not a Frenchman somewhere. No, you would never lead a French team with a wing captain. Would you? Would that be a thing? It's got to be a scrum half or a back row or a second row.
Second row, yeah.
Second row is your natural captain position, isn't it? It's just like there are some positions which are more captainy than others. You can't run another prop because he's doing things. Like the second row, big, intimidating bloke, or back row, absolute warrior. Those are your two.
Or back row looks incredible in the kit.
Yeah.
Charles Olivon.
Yeah, exactly.
Olivon.
Aldrich.
Yeah. A good one.
But no, Olivon is a captain. He has captained previously. I don't like halfbacks as captains. I don't mind a 12, but I prefer not. So it can't be a natural decision maker. It can't be a front row.
No.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Number 8 just feels like the best position.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Like, there's a reason that he's standing there ready to carry the ball, because he's the best at carrying the ball.
Yeah.
He should be your captain. Yeah. Okay.
So, you mentioned Rio Dias not a world-class winger. There was a world-class winger on the pitch in this game.
Yeah.
His name is Damien Penault.
He's
so
good.
Just
good.
Every time he pops up, and he pops up everywhere, he just does everything right, and he's so strong, and he's so fast. Yeah.
He's so strong. The other guy who I think is worth talking about is,
Deportier.
Deportier.
Where's he come from?
I mean, Bordeaux.
My beloved Bordeaux.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's been around the under 20. He's only 21. Him, Legarek, yeah. Both 21. And
so him, Legarek, and Bierre.
Bierre, right? That's it.
When Legarek threw his outrageous pass, all three guys involved with that were 21.
Yeah.
21. Like, the future of French rugby is very safe. It's very safe. So you look at how...
That said, there are some areas where they lack a little bit of depth. Centre is one of them. They've got Emilien Gueton, who's another youngster, who's just waiting in the wings. But they've called up Antoine Frisch
now
from Munster.
I know.
He's a good player, though.
He is a good player. This, like, if he actually plays for France, that might be the worst decision of his career.
Go on.
Because currently he's played in France, England and Ireland, because he's eligible for all of them.
Yes.
So he ticks the EQP box, he ticks the Irish qualified player box, he ticks the GIF, however you describe it, if you were to play in France. So right now he can play for all three, in any of those countries, so he's more valuable right now. If he gets, the worst thing he could do is get one cap, because that 67% of the clubs or countries that he could play in are gone. And he could only then play in one. And if he only ever gets one cap,
yeah. This is true.
If
he gets 50 caps,
the best thing he could do is use this his agent can use this as a great PR marketing tool, but not actually
Ireland.
Get a cap.
Yes,
but then
he's been in. I'm sure he's been in an Ireland squad, wider squad, or training squad. Yeah.
Then you fall into the England trap when they just cap you once and sack you off. I hate that. No, if he's called up to France, he should go and play for France and move back and get a massive contract. That'd be great of him. Just on the centres, I was watching today, and obviously Gael Ficou went in for a try.
Lovely feet.
Oh, God. I let out this involuntary.
He's not 30 yet.
Yeah.
I know. He's been playing for so long
When he scored, I literally let out this involuntary yelp of delight. Such a pleasure.
Like when Gary Neville, when Fernando Torres scored against Barcelona in the Champions League. I'm going to find a clip of that. So this is what I'm imagining.
Oh, for you. Chelsea?
Yeah.
In the final?
Hold on. No, it wasn't in the final. It was semi-final, I think. Anyway.
Was it?
Torres... Gary,
it's like right
Neville
at the end,
commentary.
Wasn't it?
Hold on, here we go. Do you get these Monzo adverts on YouTube?
No, because I'm
not.
It must be some algorithm. Anyway, this is Barcelona against Chelsea.
It's coming! The most dramatic story of the season. It's Torres against Chelsea.
it wasn't dissimilar.
Wait for it. Stop there. Hold on.
And I think
I want to hear the whole thing. I want to hear the whole thing now. I need the unbelievable at the end. Come on. Anyway, at the end he says, unbelievable!
I think it's an actual privilege to watch Gael Ficou.
So he's 29.
Just play rugby. I think he's an incredible player. The future of French rugby is in rude health, and it's in stark contrast to the future of Welsh rugby. So France are putting these players in because, well, why not? Let's see how they go. Clomier is another one who I instantly fell in love with. Today.
The big prop.
Oh, give me more of that, please. Meanwhile, Wales, I think, are throwing these lads in because they just don't know what else to do.
There is no one else.
There is no one else, is there? And Joe Roberts did really well today. Really well. There's some bright sparks, but they're just not good enough. There's no amount of coaching that Warren Gatland can give these boys is going to be good enough. They're just not good enough. From even the guys who are meant to be good, like Cam Winnett is a fine player.
Mm.
But you're asking a lot of a guy with three caps. All of a sudden, he's a second coming. He wouldn't be even considered, I don't think, if he was English.
No, or Irish, or Scottish, or French.
Now, he's doing great. Rio Dyer, love him. He's not getting anywhere near England. Nowhere near. I admire the effort so much. But it's not just their physical size. Like, they have a couple of guys in the pack who are really good operators. Rafael played his socks off again. But, they can't do it every week and expect... They've got to play like they did today every week and then get every decision going their way and keep their amazing discipline, which is absolutely spectacular. They've got to do everything right. And then only then will they maybe get a 50-50 win. That's it's just they're just not good enough.
Just one thing. Best performer of the day for me. You just talked about discipline. Best performance of the entire day for me was Luke Pearce. I thought he was brilliant.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, really. They really let the boys play.
He let the
controlled
boys
the game.
Mm. But was there a little bit of naivety though from Wales? You talked about Warren Gatland just taking the shackles off a bit, and I understand the thinking, but there's two things actually with this one. In hindsight, Tompkins North, I'm struggling to understand that call.
Was there an injury?
No, to neither.
And
they've just had 2 weeks off, so it wasn't a rotation thing. As far, I wouldn't imagine.
Yeah,
bizarre, isn't it?
That is bizarre.
Because Watkin ticks no boxes for me,
and they played manfully. Joe Robert, Watkin made a good break for Thomas Williams's try, and Joe Roberts scored a try. So I'm not saying they did poorly, but it seems like a naive selection. Like he's gone. I'm going to go all in on this complete opposite of Warren Ball. Which, as fun as it is, it's going to come unstuck.
Comms were saying, weren't they? And it was absolute garbage commentary, to be fair. I mean, it was really, really poor analysis and commentary. They were saying things like, this fitter, leaner Wales team. I was like, no. Wales don't have... It's not like Wales have just left the 22 stone locks at home. You know, they do not have them. This is not a conscious decision to go leaner, fitter and smaller. There is nobody else to play rugby. I'm probably the next one up. Like, there was just nobody else. But they kept on banging this drum. And for the last 10 minutes, those boys were dead on their feet. They gave absolutely everything.
They really did give everything.
But there's just not enough, is there?
And there was... You watch that last 10 minutes and tell me that Wales are fitter than France. You can't.
Not even close.
Well, there's an element where you go, Awini Antonio and another bunch of giant four, and Manny Mayafu start, and then you bring on Colom and Taufa Finua.
Yeah.
I mean,
did you see the weight of the French pack, the starting French
80
pack?
80 kilograms more. I've never seen a bigger difference, to be honest.
Wow. Yeah, 10 kegs a man.
972 kilograms was the starting French pack.
Yeah.
Wow.
But of course, according to the commentators, I mean, they just mustn't have done any work. They must have just shown up, had a coffee. They're smaller. It must mean they're fitter. Garbage. Absolute garbage. Do your job properly or just don't bother showing up. And it showed at the end because, Wales used their bench. The only guy who was like international size, well, maybe two. I mean, maybe...
Will Rowlands
and Beard.
Yeah.
I mean, Beard's...
They are both big.
Yeah,
big boys.
He's a big, good player. But it's just not. It's just the front row in particular is so poor. It is so poor.
There were a few scrums in this as well.
I mean, France just had to lean on the Welsh scrummers on some occasions, and they'd win the penalty. They got their act together towards the end because they're so bad. No, that's not the right word. Because they are so outclassed. They're not bad. They're outclassed. Mm. I root for them even more. I really root for them because you just want to see what they can do.
I was watching this. I was watching it with my 3-year-old who'd just woken up from a nap, and she wanted the blue team to win, and I wanted the red team to win.
Yeah, I did want the blue team to win. I'm not going to lie.
You're a Welshman, a proud Welshman.
Yeah, that France team is just so cool. So cool.
We've got an email here from, I'm just looking at the... Okay, Wiggy Wobbly. Hello, Wiggy. Wiggy says, this is picking up on something we mentioned a couple of weeks ago about Sean Edwards' post-match interview. He said, another interesting dig from Sean Edwards in his pre-match chat. He said, quote, defence has been good, only conceded one try. So that paints a picture, as we picked up on a couple of weeks ago, that if Sean Edwards is using his... press conference time to highlight the good work he's doing, he might feel slightly under pressure. Although it felt like France were a little bit more like themselves today. And interestingly, there's been some photographs this week of Rafael Ibanez back in the squad. He's technically still the team manager contractually, but he was actually in and amongst the group. And it's thought that he's quite an important figure in the whole unity and cohesion of the group.
Can I just make a point about support staff? So DOR's generally speaking look quite smart, don't they? So Fabien Galtier looks smart. Warren Gatland was in a suit today. I don't know what the etiquette is for, you know, in-game attire. But the Welsh coaches look like down and outs who they've dragged out of a pub. Like, they are all unshaven. Their hair is everywhere. They're not in particularly athletic shape and they're wearing sportswear. I mean, they do look like someone who visits the pub at 12 o'clock every single day.
I bet they love a beer.
They look like it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You were just saying, if you just took the... What's that razor where you say... Is it Occam's razor?
If they came out of like...
The most simple answer is the most likely answer.
Usually the correct one, yeah.
Well, if that is the case, then those coaches are probably getting rat-assed last night in the hotel.
I mean, you just look at him sitting there around Gatland in his... in his suit. You know, if they walked out of the Royal Oak in Chorlton and I was walking the kids past, kids, just come to one side. Just walk on the other side of the street.
Yeah, just to highlight that, you know, some people take the mickey out of Chorlton being some like hippie middle-class enclave. It does have a vegan deli. It does have a vegan deli, but it also has the Royal Oak.
Yeah.
They just look like they've given up on their aesthetics completely. They just want something comfy to waste away the day in between soap operas, and they now coach a rugby team. They need to smarten up. I mean, it needs to start at the top. They need to smarten up. I noticed that Steve Borthwick was wearing like a gilet, but actually that England kit, they all look relatively like, at least they look like they're in new kit. Welsh ones just look awful.
And a team that we will get onto who are seeing some positive stuff. They've got Italy have Casada,
Gonzalo
Casada, who looked very dapper. Looks very dapper.
Yeah.
What is the right attire? I mean, what is the right attire for a backroom support staff on match day?
Well, I would say, well, but it depends. Shirt and tie, blazer.
Kind of depends what you do.
Yeah, if you're running onto the pitch, if you're a water boy, you don't want to be running on his suit.
So Warren Gatland wears suit and tie.
Yes, he does. Okay. He's got to face the press. So, okay.
Yeah. Well, no, he has to face the press, but also his role in the warm-up is nothing.
No.
Yeah, yeah.
Steve Borthwick is out there he's always up the ladder catching the balls from the hooker. He's out there doing little kicks up in the air for his second rows practicing. Mm. So he does all of that stuff with the players. So Steve Borthwick wears a tracksuit with a gilet. Fine, it makes sense. There is an element where I go, you've maybe got a little bit of time, backroom staff, when your warm-up's done and the players are just on their own. Nip into the change room, come out in your,
I think
come
chinos,
out in your shirt and tie.
Or trousers, a polo shirt. Polo shirt is like the minimum standard.
What about leaning into like rugby a little bit, particularly at Twickenham, and just going for like a proper old-fashioned England rugby blazer? Bright red.
Very much with white piping. I'm very... Yes. Yes. Yes, absolutely.
With a pair of chinos and nice brown brogues.
Yeah, I'm very much into that. I'm very much into that. Particularly for the players for the after game. I'm just trying to think, because they are actually at work before I absolutely annihilate them. But, you know, you're on a laptop, aren't you? You're on a laptop. So if you're on a laptop, you have to wear the blazer. If you've got a water bottle or you need to be on the pitch, you can be in... So I think a bit more cash. I think the very minimum should be a polo shirt. Very minimum. You can't have a zip-up tracksuit top. Or can you?
If it's cold and you're running water bottles on, that's fine.
Yeah, that's definition. Here you go. If you're in the coaching box, you've got to wear a minimum polo shirt. If you're pitch side, you can wear the tracksuit.
Yeah, I think if you're in the stand or the coaching box, wherever it is, and you're... It's not a routine for you to go pitch side. You should be in a blazer. You should be in a suit.
I tend to agree. Sort it out. F1 have probably got it right, because that's like, they're moving about. It's a bit of a, you know, it's a bit physical. They wear polo shirts. That's your minimum.
Polo shirts, if not a shirt.
Yeah, if not a shirt. Short sleeve, maybe. Yeah. Maybe I can get on board with that.
Oh, I don't like shorts. Adults in short sleeve shirts, I don't feel good about that.
Unless you're working the door.
It's fine, it's fine if you're
school
at the
children.
Beach, if you're chinos and some penny loafers at the beach. But you should never, unless you're doing WWE fancy dress, you should never wear a short sleeve shirt with a tie.
My dad buys short sleeve shirts, and me and my brother are forever just saying, mate, dad, what are you doing? There you go, you've given up.
Yeah, it's so true. So that's just my little whinge about the Welsh.
I think that's an important thing to have a whinge about, the attire of coaches. I think it's we've got to have standards.
Yeah, so France, I mean, it is a disappointing Six Nations for them, isn't it?
Oh, but definitely.
Overall.
Definitely.
They can still rely on some unbelievable talent. Unbelievable. I think Le Garec?
Le Garec, yeah.
Was one of the match?
He is talented. He's seriously talented.
And he must be like 4 years younger than DuPont.
Yeah, about like, you'd say 21 six, and DuPont's 26.
Six years younger.
Is he 6 years?
Yeah, maybe they've got the natural replacement lined up.
Yeah.
Mm. DuPont, by the way, who was involved with 12 tries directly sometime this week. 14 tries or something.
It was last weekend, the end of last weekend. It might have been whilst the podcast was on.
It was.
France won their first sevens title in 19 years.
Did they really?
Yes.
Wow.
And it took him 1 week to warm up, and then week number two, winning silverware and directly involved in that 12 tries.
And he looks to be just as effective. I was thinking, by July, maybe this will be the case by July, but I was thinking, he's going to suddenly get leaner and not look quite as stacked as he is, but he still just looks like he's able to be him.
Yeah.
And he's incredible.
They do a hell of a lot of running, don't they? I think they are the number one position in terms of distance run.
Mm.
So it does not surprise me. Does not surprise me that he's transitioned quite well to sevens.
And he was gassing people, like gassing legit sevens players who tend to be quite fast.
Yeah, they do, don't they?
It's such a stupid thing to say that the best player in the world who has no obvious weaknesses and is like talented in every single dimension is going to be good at a slightly different form of the game. But he is. He is that good.
He'd be so good at rugby league.
He'd just be good at everything. He's so
football,
good.
And tennis and table tennis. Climbing, paragliding.
On good at other things, have either of you watched any of the NFL Pathway documentary stuff that they're putting out?
Did you see Harry Mallinder's scores that he got on his combine day?
No, I've
or
not.
Pro day.
Was that this week's one?
That was in the last... No, it wasn't. Oh. It wasn't an episode. It was just the score. It was just the scores that got posted online.
No.
So I think it might have been, again, maybe too late for the podcast, but at the very end of last weekend. So Lewis Rees-Sammet and the outfield players, the non-kicking players, mm-hmm. have their, a pro day in about a week's time. And that is where all the NFL scouts will stand around, watch them, get their combine results, see them running some routes and that sort of thing, and technical drills, and then they'll make a decision on do any of them fancy Lewis Rees-Sammet and the rest of them. The kickers did theirs the other day, and Harry Mallinder, he put up the longest punt out of anybody, and or was it the longest kickoff? It was either punt or kickoff, I can't remember which, but Harry Mallinder got the highest score. That's not out of all of the guys on the NFL player pathway, of which there are quite a few kickers. That is out of all college kickers as well.
Wow.
Well, Harry Mallinder, so of all the players who've got a shot of making it, Harry Mallinder might have the best shot, simply because I was watching, they do this NFL UK player pathway documentary every week. I was watching it a couple of weeks ago when... Because the kickers are only there for a short period of time.
Yeah.
All the other players they've brought in for
10 weeks.
10 weeks. Kickers are only there for about 4 or 5 weeks. And they were talking about him when they brought him in. And they were saying, like, he's 6'5", he's 230 pounds. He's lifting weights that some of the running backs, tight ends are lifting. He's got all of that stuff, which is like, the eye of the coaches will all focus on someone who ticks all those boxes, and then he's a kicker who is just a kicker. So he's like a kicker plus. He's the kind of player
special teams guy.
Yeah, he's the kind of player who I think will just attract a lot of tension, attention for those reasons.
Oh, you think they're thinking like fake punts and things?
It might not even be that. It might just be that even if they just only use him for a kicker, why not have your kicker who's 6'5" and 230 pounds and can bench 225 for, I've not seen how many reps he could do, but 30 reps, 20 reps, 10 reps, 15 reps.
Mm. What is the bench press test? It is...
It's 225 pounds.
So 100 kilos.
Just over 100 kilos, yeah.
As many reps as you can.
As many reps as you can. The all-time record...
It's 48 or something like that.
I think it might be 52. It might be 40.
Oh, my God, that's so outrageous. That'll be someone with tiny short arms and a massive barrel chest, surely.
It used to be, it belonged to the guy who was drafted by Chicago Bears at defensive end or tackle.
I think the guy who got the record was not drafted. Maybe. Was it a Kiwi chap?
Yeah, it was David.
Like a
South Sea Islander guy.
But I remember doing this. I spoke about this on the pod maybe 3 years ago. So the guy who did that, his body weight was, say, 130 or 135 kg to do 101 kg, 102 kg, 52 reps. And I was like, what could I do compared to my body weight? My body's a lot lower than that, but can I do proportionally the same? Which would be like maybe 60 kg. No, I couldn't. I got to, I think, 42 and a half kg for 52 unbroken reps.
And that's a lot, though.
That was agony.
Yeah,
that
was.
Like the first 30, easy. And then you're all just like lactic acid, like seizing up.
You're going to get that rhabdo.
Yeah.
Toxicity.
I had a mixture of like powerlifting and Olympic lifting competition coming up last summer before I did my bloody arm in. And it was like you combine squats, clean, snatch and bench. It's like a hybrid sort of competition.
Yeah.
And I wanted to get some ringers in for my team. So not only was it a hybrid competition, it's like two girls and three boys or something like that.
Oh, okay.
So I phoned a couple of my friends who once played professional rugby or currently do play professional rugby. I was like, just wonder how big their lifts are in comparison to mine, because I'm an all-right lifter. My word. Right. What do you reckon the best bench press was that I found out of people on my phone?
Powerlifting.
As in, just like rugby players, powerlift, so bench press, effectively. That'd be a powerlift.
I would go...
Because the best one I found...
Paul Gustard told us his bench, didn't he?
Did he? What did he say?
I think he said 157.
Yeah, much bigger than that.
Yeah, I expect it to be bigger than that.
230.
No, not that big.
Ooh, that's massive.
I'm just going for silly numbers. Yeah, yeah.
That is a silly number. 180?
Does it start with a 2? Does it start with a 2?
No, it does not start with a 2.
Okay, yeah.
180?
Higher.
190?
Higher.
192.
192.5. It was 198.
Oh. Coffins. Wow. Yeah. He should have transitioned to front row.
And he's like, I told him this, right? And he's like, I could never get over 200. Jamal Ford Robinson has got some stupid numbers on dumbbells, like not on a classic bench press, but he was telling me about the reps he was doing with, I want to say, 60 kilogram dumbbells. It was just some stupid weight, because this season is the strongest that he's ever been. So I don't know if you've seen any of his videos, but some of his deadlift numbers and squat numbers are through the roof.
Speaking of videos, Brian Majal is coming back.
Is he?
Well,
has he come back?
So there was a post on Thursday or Friday night. It popped up on, because I used to follow him on YouTube. So it just popped up, the video released 4 hours ago. I said, fantastic. But it was just kind of...
I haven't seen it yet.
It was a bit
poignant. It's like getting a text from a dead friend, isn't it?
it was a good video. It was a little bit poignant. It was like reflecting on rugby and family, positive side of family, and the positive sides of rugby. But yeah, just good to see. He didn't really say very much, didn't really say what he's going to do, but good to see him back.
Interesting.
I'll get him on my channel. Do a bit of promote him.
Right, we've teased Italy, Scotland. There will be a lot of Scotland fans not wanting us to do this section, but if there's anyone in Italy listening and anywhere else, we've got to talk about Italy, because this game, I loved this game. Watched it down in the gym. Watched the first half doing weights, the second half on the turbo trainer. And really, really enjoyed it. And I didn't think I was going to enjoy the second half, because Scotland were comfortable in the first half. They scored three tries at a canter, two forwards-based tries, one out wide from Kyle Steyn. And Italy scored one good try with a little delicate kick through from the young nine to Brex, who played really well. Brexham, Brexham Menichello is such a good centre partnership.
Such a great partnership.
They're lovely.
Menichello, there's a lad who's 22.
Yeah.
He's 21 even, maybe.
And in great shape.
Serious player.
Lovely centre partnership. But it was half time, Scotland in total control.
Are you playing some music there? Because your foot is on the music button.
Well, my foot.
Oh, that's right, the fader's down. So it's fine. Sorry. We're good. I'm monitoring the output. It's all good. Continue, Phil.
Scotland scored their fourth try 3 minutes into the second half. It's like, right, that is game over now. They're 4 tries to 1 up, except it's not a try. There's some blocking by Schumann, and Italy get a reprise.
Mm-hmm.
And that seemed to be the wake-up call that Italy needed. And it was, at the same time, coincidentally, the call that kind of switched Scotland off for the next 35 minutes.
Yeah, and it's interesting you mentioned that, because as much as I do want to talk about the positives for Italy, that is a theme of this Six Nations for Scotland in the game against Wales at half-time,
yes.
27-0 up, stopped playing.
Yeah.
In the game against France, when they had them on the ropes and could have put them to the sword, stopped playing.
Yeah.
And then, weirdly, just kind of clammed up again.
Yeah.
Which says to me that it's top 2 inches stuff.
Yeah, maybe there is a bit of that. But Scotland did nothing in that in-between period from them having the disallowed try and them scoring their fourth try. But at that point, it was too late because they were 11 points down, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Or 9 points down. They didn't really do anything. And Italy came back into the game, took a couple of penalties, scored a couple of nice tries. There was a little chip over the top, another good kick. So they had the Brex kick and the kick for Louis Leiner. Then built a load of pressure, and eventually it was the Vincent break.
Lovely break.
Which was a lovely break.
I didn't know he had this rugby in him. I mean, because he's not a first choice at Exeter Chiefs.
Well, the reality is he only came there this season.
Yeah.
We've hardly seen him.
Yeah.
We've seen him a bit playing, and he's only very young. He's 21, 22 again. And he's a staffer by trade.
By
birth, who came over to play for Zebre or Benetton for a couple of years. And then, as obviously, Baxter knows things. Baxter's picked him up. He's a talented player. He went round Kyle Steen for that break. Left him.
And his tackle, he had like 18 tackles in the match and loads of metres. Sides of the ball. He's just, really positive. But you just mentioned Louis Leiner's try. Did you see Michael Leiner in the crowd?
I didn't notice it.
There was a little shot. It might have been that they showed it afterwards, but later on that they came back to it. But they showed a shot of him. It looked like he was in tears, to be honest.
Oh, really?
With Louis Leiner's mum, who is Italian. Because he was born there.
Yeah, yeah.
But it wasn't just that he was born there. I think his mum is Italian.
He's Italian as well.
Yeah.
Fair play.
Yeah, it was awesome. Great story.
Yeah. Good seeing it. Louis Leiner, he made a couple of good defensive interventions against Van der Merwe. But other than that try, he didn't do anything. He did virtually nothing with ball in hand besides that try. A positive start and a winning start.
Biggest plus for me for Italy and sort of in the second half of last week, 2 weeks ago, and this game is the scrum half, Paige Rello. That's one.
He
was really
nice.
Good. Yeah, really nice scrum half. But they need one because they've been that position's been shocking for them.
Varney's a solid player.
Competent player.
Yes. Exactly that. Solid, but not spectacular.
Yeah.
And you've got the younger Garbisi as well, who started a little bit, but Alessandro, then I think has been injured.
Yeah.
Because the elder Garbisi.
Oh, good man, JB. JB's back. We're still talking Scotland, Italy, mate. If you wanted to go away for another 20 minutes, that's fine.
Because the elder Garbisi is superb. Yeah. And I found it hilarious. The first kick of the day. A few minutes in.
Fell off the tee, yeah.
Yeah.
And he smiled and slotted it.
Life imitates art, or art imitates art, or life imitates life, whatever it was.
That thing.
The mirror image. Yeah, because it's not quite the saying, but it was the mirror image of the final play that cost them the win against France.
Yeah.
Where he hit the ball falls off the tee. And It happened again, and he just calmly smiled, laughed to himself, put it back on the tee, took a few steps back, and slotted it.
Yeah, that's because he's been practicing it all week.
Practicing making the ball, like balancing the ball, just so it falls off within 5 seconds.
It does highlight that there was, well, we knew that there was no wind 2 weeks ago anyway, but in the stadium in Lille, but just highlights it's definitely either his tee or the way he's setting up his ball that he needs to
address.
Sort out.
He needs to work on it.
Okay, I don't know if you spoke about this, but how did Lionel go?
We were just speaking about that. He took his try brilliantly.
Took his try really well.
Defensively, he was solid. Made a few good interventions against Guan.
Six, 7 out of 10. Kind of did a solid job.
I'd say six out of ten. Because he took his try brilliantly. He did virtually nothing else in attack and did everything that was asked of him in defence. Yeah. So, solid.
Yeah.
So, do you agree or disagree? Oh, I can't say that, can I? Yeah, I'll go for it. Paul Gustav's assessment of him was he didn't think he was a natural rugby player as such.
He said, yeah, not a great rugby brain.
I completely disagree with.
I agreed with it at the time. Like I think, so the three players we talked about then, Caden Murley, Will Muir and Louis Leiner. Now I think two of those have great all-round rugby brains. Going forward, going backwards, chasing kicks, the whole shooting match. I think Louis Leiner is good going forward. I just don't see him as having the same intellect defensively or the same effort kick chase wise.
No, I disagree with the kick chase. I think he's a very, very high effort player. I definitely agree he's great going forward. I think his effort is top notch. I've seen him come to the AJ Bell when Harlequins were getting smashed. And he came on, he was a difference maker. He actually tried, unlike the rest of the Harlequins back then. So I love him. So I don't agree with that assessment, but I need to see more of him going backwards, I think.
Make sure you're talking to your mic, mate.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
There we go.
Yeah.
Other notable performances, Capuozza put his body on the line. God, because he's tiny. He really put his body on the line a number of times and made some superb tackles. And carried so hard as well. When George Turner, got injured tackling Capuozza just because of the acceleration on the man into contact. Really enjoyed that. Really enjoyed Montiwani as well. For a high work rate winger, he's a man you should like.
Yeah, great shape as well.
He is in great shape.
Yeah.
And Lamaro... and Negri and Vincent, lovely back row. I do like Canoni, obviously. The second row was playing, the back row not playing. Or came off the bench, but not starting. There's a lot to like about this Italian team.
Yeah, and only a few weeks ago we were saying, a referee has robbed Scotland of a Grand Slam showdown.
Yeah, I think we framed it slightly better than that, because Scotland... And we said at the time, you can't complain about that refereeing decision if you turn down multiple kicks in the sticks, you fluff try scoring opportunities, you knock on with a minute to go when Kyle Rowe makes a break down the left wing and you don't look after the pill.
Yeah,
like, you can't complain.
Yeah, are they? I don't know. I think this sort of dovetails Scotland and Wales. I sort of put them together in the sense of, do they need to be? It's weird, isn't it, having, you know, a lot of the chat about Six Nations rugby teams being about England are boring and they need to loosen up. And actually saying about Scotland and Wales, do they need to be sometimes just be a little bit more pragmatic? Sometimes just put the boot through the ball and get yourself in the right spot.
Which I don't... Scotland do that, though.
Yeah, Finn Russell does kick a lot. Yeah.
I don't know what... It's that top 2 inches that you mentioned before.
I think that's what the problem is. So
they stop playing.
That's exactly right, Tim. They even referenced it on one of the episodes I saw, the only episode I saw of whatever the Netflix show was about the Six Nations. And they were in their team meetings like, we've just stopped playing, we've just dipped at a crucial point. And
I'd forgotten they said that then.
That is, so in the Wales game and in this Italy game, that is 100% what they did.
Yeah.
They just switched. There was a period, I'm kind of repeating myself, for only your benefit, JB, not the listener's benefit. There's a period from 44 minutes into the game through to 75 minutes into the game where Scotland basically just switched off.
Yeah.
They did nothing. And Italy played well in that period, but Scotland They were so comfortable in the first half.
Do you think it's a lack of a bench? So other teams now would empty their bench and they'd have guys coming on wanting to make an impact.
It's an interesting theory, that.
So they've got good players in some positions, but it's not consistent. So, like, Ewan Ashman is good, high energy. Sam Skinner, good, high energy. Bringing Jamie Ritchie and Matt Ferguson off the bench, all really good players, can all have a positive impact. But then it's just not consistent across the park. And
it's always have good players on the bench, but you need a certain type of player to up
the... Yeah.
It's not just getting...
Being 145 kgs is quite useful. That really helps.
That's, if you're not high energy, you need high mass.
Yeah.
So pick one of the two.
Who has 145 kgs?
Roman Taufenua, Georges Henry Coulombe. England have Chandler Cunningham South now.
Oh, he played well.
He did. He's out for the Six Nations now. He's out for the final round.
What was it?
Guy Pepper is in.
His calf or knee, he went off. Guy Pepper.
I missed that.
Guy Pepper has been called up, yeah. So that's, I think, basically that means, I think Steve Borthwick's going, no one's going to be in the 23 that comes in.
I just want to have a look at someone.
So let's have a look at someone, because it'll be Ethan Roots will go back on the bench.
On Cunningham South, I've heard he's a difficult character to manage in training.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He asks lots of questions, which I actually think is a good thing.
Good.
Apparently, it's not always a good thing. And that's exactly what England need, someone who just rates.
If the question is, when's lunch?
When are we finishing?
When are we finishing?
When's this boring drill over, Steve? I don't want to do lineouts anymore, Steve.
Who was the guy who did for Australia and he got absolutely flattened? Number 8 plays for Australia. Big guy.
Nathan Lyons?
Lyons. Recently. A big white fella.
Tom Hooper.
Higginbottom. So very recently. Last couple of years.
Yeah. And the reason I mention him is because...
Not because Bobby V is the only guy that's been number 8 in recent years.
No, he's a white fellow, quite big. He might have been a 6, I don't know. But he just got the... He was returning a kick, but instead of trying to put any footwork on or look for space, he just, like a rugby league return, just went straight. And Cunningham South did that.
He did, yeah.
I loved it.
And fair play, Ty Burn putting a good shot on him.
Yeah.
Just alphaness everywhere.
And then he went off injured like 2 minutes after that with a knee, calf, ankle problem.
Oh, I'm gutted. Hang on, out of Six Nations, that's only a week, isn't it?
Yeah.
Out of Six Nations, it's a week. Okay, that's good.
Anything more on Scotland, Italy?
No, let's talk about next week's games.
Okay, cool.
Before we do that, just one thing I just wanted to mention. I'm just looking up a little bit. Okay, yeah. So, in the last week, I've noticed 2 Saracen signings.
Have you? I've noticed none.
And they are explicitly addressing a problem that we have all identified. Surely. And we are not the only.
Accountant.
They've re-signed Rhys Carey from Cardiff, who is 130 kg prop.
I did see that.
And they've signed the young, highly rated prop Phil Brantingham from Newcastle Falcons.
That's awful for Newcastle.
I actually knew both of those things were happening.
That is dreadful for Newcastle.
Well, depends how you look at it. I mean, Newcastle just love to get rid of their players, don't they?
They're a selling club these days.
Yeah, but selling a 21-year-old prop who's on the fringes of the England squad.
Tim, you're making the mistake of assuming Newcastle care. They do not care. They literally do not care. They will just find a student and they'll play that student, and if they come last, they don't care, because they'll get their central money and 3 people will show up to the stadium and that will be it. They're not a serious club.
Yeah, isn't that why they signed Steve Diamond?
Even dimes cannot do anything with what they're doing.
Well, didn't the King in the North beat Sale Sharks on Friday night in a friendly?
Did they?
Did they play?
I think so.
Well, look, this is why Steve Diamond's at Newcastle. I can't be certain, but this is my theory at least. I think he's there to try and buy the club. Now, until he actually buys the club or gets people in with money to do his bidding... Newcastle's going to be the same.
He's going to play by their rules.
Do what they tell him to, and that would sell all the other players.
Not wanting to go too far down this, but there was those pictures. There was those pictures on Instagram of people with Saudi dignitaries, which then got deleted from their accounts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if the Saudis can't afford Phil Bransingham, I suspect oil markets aren't as strong as they used to be.
Right, we are. If we're talking about
but just on the Prem, very briefly. Very sorry, what were you going to say, Jay?
I wonder how junior that Saudi prince was. I don't know if he knows what Saudi prince.
Maybe he's an apprentice. Like, maybe princes have to kind of go out and do work experience.
There's thousands of them. Like, it's not a Saudi prince. It's not like, you know, the Prince of Wales over here. I might be speaking out of turn here. Again, fact check me. I'm certain there's like thousands of Saudi princes. And this is like some underprince, which I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if he's not even royalty. They've just gone over there, shaking someone's hand, and that's it.
Just on the Premiership, I think we touched on this last week, so I don't want to go too far down that, but there should have been Premiership last weekend and in the other fallow weekend. This massive break, it's not, I don't like it.
Would one weekend of Premiership have added anything to the Premiership?
Well, does having 7 weeks add anything? Does having 7 weeks of no rugby add anything to the Premiership?
It does not. You are absolutely right there. But
It's like prime rugby time. People are actually interested and engaged. What is there rugby on this weekend? Well, not international, but there is Premiership.
Yeah, what I would say about that is, if you're just using those weeks to get rid of fixtures, like just play the fixtures and get rid of, you're not valuing them.
Yeah, what's the best way to market rugby? I understand them going, we don't want to clash with the England matches or the international matches, although I would still argue Friday night games.
Yeah, my thought on this would be
Sunday evening games
would be not to do it. There is no rugby. Let everyone have a week off, including the fans. But make sure when the Premiership comes back, it is a substantial block of meaningful games. I think putting one game in the middle of the Six Nations doesn't do it for me.
What they do post Six Nations is 2 weeks of Premiership, then 2 weeks of Champions Cup.
Or just the follow weeks. That'd be the better option.
Yeah. Well, they're getting rid of one of them in 2 years' time anyway. Anyway, next week's fixtures. Well, it's really first, isn't it?
So, 2:15.
Right, here we go. On definitions, you've already done your definition of what world class is. Phil.
It'll be mine, yeah.
What do you think a wooden spoon is?
As you got asked this today, and I didn't know the answer, I was talking to a non-rugby fan, who's a football fan, and he asked me what the games are next weekend, and I said, well, you've got the battle for the wooden spoon. 2:15 PM, Wales hosting Italy, and he said, "Do they give them a wooden spoon?" And I was like, "I don't know.
No,
is there a ceremonial spoon?"
Well, here's why I asked the question, because growing up, and I can remember Five Nations rugby.
Yes,
I watched some Five Nations rugby before Six Nations, and my understanding always was the wooden spoon was the inverse of a Grand Slam. When you get the wooden spoon when you lose all five games, not when you finish bottom of the pile. You lose all matches.
I thought it was just
whoever finishes last.
That's exactly what I thought.
I think that's what it has become. I think that's what it has become, but I think the wooden spoon was always like a specific level of shame, just like the Grand Slam is a specific level of celebration on top of, like, yes, finishing bottom is one layer, finishing bottom losing all your matches is another, just like finishing top is winning the Six Nations, but finishing top and winning all of your games is the Grand Slam. So I preferred it like that, just reserving wooden spoon for like real.
You thought of it, but yeah,
you haven't just lost, you've had an absolute stinker.
I
think that probably is better, yeah. But it's been meaningless for many years, not this year, because of Italy. They just won too many wooden spoons. The chef of
imagine
the Italian
Italy
rugby team.
Three games. I mean, we keep saying imagine, they'd just yet to do it. But it'd have been awesome if they'd have beaten France, and now Scotland, and now Wales are going down there with their form. It'd be great. I think Wales will beat them, though.
It's in...
it's in Cardiff.
Cardiff, isn't it? Yeah.
Wales are winning Cardiff.
No, they need to.
Did you see Max Boyce, by the way? How cool was that?
Didn't see it. I hate this stuff, you know.
No, it was cool. It was actually good. It was
Was it?
Like, you'd have it rather than a hacker. So, hymns and arias, mm-hmm. he did like a changed up bespoke version of that, like basically kind of sarcastic poetry in between. So he would do it like a limerick almost, and he had a little
not very diverse, is it?
He had a little jibe at the WRU in it. So you're more into it now.
I'm listening.
He was like, I would have sung Delilah, but the Union Bandit was the last line of his thing before he went in, and I was singing. It was really cool. I liked it. It was that and the little lad in the Ireland Italy game. Two great moments I'd have those over Hackers.
Oh, 100%. I'd have almost everything over Hacker, I think. Yeah, almost everything. I do get a little bit fed up though with like just the respect thing. It really annoys me. So what was it this week? Obviously, two Welsh legends. I mean, I've got to be careful what I say here. By all means, have a minute silence. But do we really need to do like the it's so respectful. They gave a 15 jersey and a 10 jersey, from the French team to the Welsh. We don't need it. It's meaningless. Stop it. Just have your minute silence or clap or do whatever you want to and then carry on. Like, who was the one that they did the other week? I think Australia gave a folded up ceremonial thing to cultural nonsense trinket to New Zealand. Who cares? I hate all of it. I hate it all equally. I hate it when there's dead legends. I hate it when it's cultural stuff. Just have your minute of silence and get on with it. Like, these guys have not played rugby. I've never seen them play rugby. All I ever hear is what legends that they were, and I'm sure that they were legends. But that's it now. Just clap and move on.
Just very quickly, I just found this little article from Alan Dimmock in Rugby World.
Oh, this is ace. This is absolutely ace.
This is just about the wooden spoon. But you'll have to tell me in a minute what the article you're talking about is. But it just says, so the wooden spoon came from, apparently, Cambridge University, where they used to award a wooden spoon to the mathematician student with the lowest mark in the
brutal
in the 19th century. So it's like you're the worst of this incredibly best. Talented bunch of people. Yeah. In the same way,
it's the opposite to the Fields Medal.
Yeah, in the same way that the Lantern Rouge in cycling is the rider that finishes last of those who finish. Because lots drop out and don't finish, but the one it's like Mr. Irrelevant.
Oh no!
The last person who gets drafted in the NFL draft. So it's like you are the worst of this incredibly small band of amazing people,
like hyper elite individuals.
So that's where the wooden spoon comes from. And in France, they're very, very clear that the wooden spoon should still, as it once was, only be classified when a team has been whitewashed, but other nations are more loose with it.
So my understanding was always that just whoever finishes bottom. I actually prefer your interpretation.
On Alan Dimmock's Twitter feed now, he has got an amazing thread. An amazing, amazing thread. It was one of the things, like, I've not been on Twitter for a long time. Every time I'm about to tweet, I tweet and then I instantly delete it. I just don't want to. I've got this forum for that.
Special report on play. Oh, no, that's a.
As soon as you say it, you'll know the one that I mean. He goes through old editions of like 80s or early 90s Rugby World to see what the headlines were about the teams.
Yeah, here we go.
I've got it.
This is really good.
I used to love Rugby World back in the day.
You don't live it now?
I don't read it now.
I might buy an edition.
There was loads of talk about kicking and England style.
It's great. It's all exactly the same stuff.
Amazing. So Clive Norling, the senior referee, says, talking about the number of penalties and such, I've seen referees who've blown their whistle quite correctly, but you see an advantage and think, why did you play on there? I believe we have to look at our senior referees and involve them more in meetings and use more modern technology. We should go through videos of... fine. It's just quite ironic, some of this stuff,
isn't it?
It's
great, isn't it? I spent a fair proportion of time reading through that.
In 1994... I have to say it's been a poor quality championship. and the quality hasn't been that high because the teams are fitter, faster, and have become more professionals. This goes back to what I was saying earlier. Sides are starting to cancel each other out much more these days in the tournament, and teams are very good defensively.
But imagine what they'd think of today's game.
Oh,
it would blow their mind.
It really would.
Like, and so what's it going to look like in 10 years' time?
I can't remember when 2020 lockdown when we rewatched the 1991, I want to say, semi-final.
Oh, it was later than that, wasn't it?
No, not the 1999 France versus... maybe I just watched it on my own. England versus...
Oh, no, no.
With Brian Moore playing and those and Rob Andrew. And it was England's sole attacking tactic inside the opposition's 22 was an up and under.
Brilliant. Brilliant. No, I mean, it's hard to acknowledge this because everyone speaks about these guys like they were legends. And they were at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, so it's very unfair to compare rugby players back in the day with today because it's not even close. They're nowhere near as good. But watching New Zealand France, a classic semi-final from, was it 90? I want to say 97?
99. 99, New Zealand France.
Yeah.
That was 99.
99, sorry. They were rubbish.
The positioning
were rubbish.
The position of the back three was...
It was like...
Comical.
Yeah. Like, as a level 7 coach today, I would not accept that. Let alone from the elite sides. Like, it was awful. It was genuinely awful. And that was one of the best games of all time.
We're going for a Wales win.
I'm going for an Italy win.
For an Italy win, okay.
I am.
Wales win, I think.
Tompkins and North come back.
Yeah, they're disciplined and whatnot. Oh, who knows?
Well,
the answer is I don't know. We will see on Saturday. Great answer.
Then we have at 4:45, Ireland versus Scotland in Dublin.
While Ireland's sealing another Six Nations Championship by hook or by crook.
Yeah, it's a game that doesn't really matter. Ireland will have this in the bag.
I'm certain they will do. The only thing that would be interesting, that would make the final game interesting, would be Ireland to get nil point.
Nil point.
If Ireland get nil point, then England, they have to win with a bonus point. Well, so they have to get a 5-point win.
Getting second place ahead of France would be pretty cool for England.
Yes. Yeah. I think going into the tournament, if you'd offered me second place, I would have been happy with it.
Yeah.
I mean, England could still finish fourth, bear in mind where they are now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they could technically finish fifth, I think, mathematically, but that's almost impossible.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, I'd be happy. I want to see an England win in France. That's what I really want to see.
That'd be very cool.
Because you've got to back it up. You like in the World Cup, or actually, let's say across the whole of 2023, the entirety of last year, England probably put in two good performances. They put in a good performance against South Africa and lost, and they put in a solid, competent performance against Argentina and won handily. Besides that, the whole of the rest of the year was poor. So this year, you've got to put in two back-to-back performances. The rest of the tournament has been mediocre at best. Great performance to beat Ireland. If you don't back it up, it's kind of meaningless.
Yeah, and I think backing it up doesn't only mean a victory to me. Like, I was genuinely, towards the end of the England-Ireland game yesterday, I was genuinely thinking, actually, this stadium has made noises that I haven't heard in years, and I was there for some of the dark days, that South Africa game in 22 and Scotland in 23. And it was just a completely different feel. And so I was kind of like, you know what, probably should have won that, but I'll take this. So I don't mind if England don't win, as long as they back up the performance.
Yeah.
That's in unchanged 15. Can they do that? Did anyone get injured?
No, just cutting himself on the bench. Well, so no.
Did Slade go off with a knock?
Possibly, yeah, because Daly came on for him, didn't he?
Yeah, and Chesham was holding his wrist arm, but then did play on. So.
They're both still in the training squad. That's
good.
An unchanged 15 would be great. And unchanged 15, I think they're going to give France a hell of a run.
Yeah, agreed.
And France will probably be relatively unchanged themselves, although...
Yeah, well, they're not going with Ramos again. I can tell you that much. I mean, you can play around...
Well, who else? They want no one else.
Anyone else would be the answer. Not to be unkind.
Louis Carbonell.
That's... Yeah, why not? I mean, it's, you know, anyone. Anyone. Cami Lopez. Anyone.
what's his name? Plisson.
Jules Plisson.
Yeah, where's he? Clermont.
Yeah.
Watching Ramos retreat to the wing to keep out of trouble and then getting caught in the transition twice by Wales. Look, you can do that against a bunch of kids and an undersized Wales team. You can't get away with that against England. So Ramos, as I described him in a WhatsApp group, is a fragile genius, which is exactly what he is. He can't play 10. Like, he's an amazing player. He's one of the world's great players. I believe that. And he's, you know, you can't have a guy like that in your midfield. Simple as that.
He's such a handy player, though, because he is a 90% kicker. He's genuinely one of the best kickers of the ball in the world.
He's one of the best sticks. Pure rugby players in the world. But he's built like an accountant. And he plays like one, too. No, he doesn't, actually. That isn't true. He defends like one.
Yeah, defensively.
Literally like an accountant.
Yes.
There we go. Thank you very much for listening. Contact eggchasers@gmail.com is where you can get in touch. Patreon.com/eggchasers to support the podcast if you appreciate that we're there for you every single Monday morning, 52 weeks of the year, 10 years and counting, and you want more content like the podcast we're going to attempt, which we haven't done before, but there is a copy of Grazia magazine next to JB, and that is going to be the springboard into the extra content that is coming your way. Until then, let the boys end.
Adios.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud. Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.